This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another Tour Life. We've got a special co-host for you tonight. Calvin Heinberg is filling in for Yuli as Yuli comes back from his honeymoon. Big shoes to fill. We had Simon Kohess last week, which was awesome. But Calvin is a fan favorite for sure on the show. So we have high hopes for today. Big show, though. Today is Wednesday, November 15th, 2023. We've got Ken Climo doing an exclusive interview with the Disc Golf Network with Brian Earhart. He says a few things that stir up some pros. Some pros agree, some pros disagree. We'll kind of see where me and Calvin stand on that issue. Simon takes to Instagram with a hot take on us embracing the easiness of disc golf and trying to go more into that direction. We have also our first legit player movement rumor. I don't know if I can say legit and rumor in the same sentence, but I just said it. We'll see if Calvin can give us a little more insight on that. We've got stat leaders from the 2023 season produced by UDisc. We'll break through all different stats. I also have some stats that I like and some stats that I don't like. And the last one is, I challenge an amateur golfer to a $1,000 match. Does he accept? We will find out. And then we'll finish the show off with some listener questions as well. Calvin, how's it going, brother? Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. All is well. I've been, you know, kind of out and about the past couple of weeks, as I was telling you, just at a couple of different weddings, but headed home here tomorrow. But yeah, everything's good.
You went to Paige's wedding. You were talking about this before we went live. Yep. What is it like to go to a disc golf wedding? Is it different than other weddings? Is there a different vibe to it?
I think it may have been, you know, I don't know if I'd really call it a disc golf wedding. There were definitely disc golfers there, but there was quite a few people I honestly didn't know. So, You know, it's kind of the same as, you know, many other weddings where, you know, a few people and then there's just a bunch that you don't know. So it was definitely fun. They held it in their backyard and, you know, they did a great job. It was weather wasn't, you know, the greatest, but you know, the rain held off for the most part, but it was a really nice wedding and I was glad I got to go.
Well, shout out to Paige for that. And you a dance guy at the weddings? Do we see you on the dance floor?
I've been out there the past couple weekends. So yeah.
What is this number one song that gets you out of your chair and on the dance floor?
You know, if I'm being completely honest, I don't know if there's a song that does it. I think I just have to have the right number of drinks.
Okay. Yeah. I think a lot of people might answer.
Then anything's good. But no, I'm not naturally inclined to just be a dancer out there. But
okay. Fair enough. Yeah. We used to go to a place back in college called the Atlantic. We would go on indie nights on Thursdays. Woo. It was a time, brother. It was a time. Very few times did I ever leave with my shirt on. I'll leave it at that. All right. There was a Raiders game this week. Last week, I said the Raiders are back. This week, I'm doubling down. The Raiders are back. Did we just beat one of the worst teams in the NFL last week, the Giants? Yes. Did we just beat another terrible team in the New York Jets this week? Yes. Are they going to go and get absolutely annihilated to the Miami Dolphins next week or this Sunday? Most likely. But we did win. It was also a primetime game. And if you guys watched on TV, you might have saw Kelce. Kelce made TV primetime a few times. I think Silas has a clip here that we can show. She's on the very left side at the very end, right there. Boom. TV appearance. I think she made it twice, actually, which is always cool when she gets to get on TV and then you guys send the tweets and stuff. So I appreciate it. Calvin, I have a question for you, though.
Yep.
You being pro... I always get almonds stuck in my throat.
I need to stop eating almonds before the show. 1 second. It's literally the worst nut in the world is an almond. As far as just being able to talk after you eat. My question to you, if you showed up to a sports game, okay, so whether it be NFL, NBA, NHL, I don't care. Is it okay to wear a jersey from a team that is not competing in that game?
You know, I always find it weird when I see people doing it. You know, you can rep your team, I guess. I guess it's acceptable, but I mean,
is that kind of like a look at me type of thing? Is that like a look at me energy from these people?
I think so. I think it kind of is.
Because like, why are you going to that game?
I think when you're at a sporting event, as a fan, you're kind of embracing generally like a group mentality of rooting for, you know, home or away. And, you know, being different than either of that, it does kind of seem like a look at me. So I think it's acceptable, but would I do it? No.
There was a guy in front of us that was wearing a Tua jersey, a Miami Dolphins Tua. Now, maybe this was like, some sort of, what is it? Connor Stallings. Is that the Michigan cheater guy that was like on the sideline? Maybe it's one of those things. Maybe Miami paid him to go to the Raiders game to start getting some signs for next week. I'm not sure. I will say this. I am definitely more of like the home guy. I think it's just more fun that way. I don't have a baseball team. So when me and Kelsey went to the World Series back when it was the Astros versus the Dodgers, we just got gear for the home team. So we had an Astros hat when they were playing Houston. And then we went out to LA to watch the game out there. We had all Dodgers gear on. It's fun to root for the home team when you don't have like a chicken in the race. That's not the right saying. A hen in the race, a dog in the race. That's the right saying. A dog in the race. So, it's an interesting vibe when you see someone show up to a game and you're like, that team's not playing. What are you doing, sir? All right. Let's go to the Ken Climo interview real quick. That's the next thing I want to talk about. So Ken Climo sat down with Brian Earhart, who is potentially turning into one of the best interviews, one of the best disc golf media, one of the best people I think disc golf has right now. And he sat down and had an interview with the champ, Ken Climo. And the clip that they decided to pull out to kind of promote the interview, to promote people to go to watch, was this one. So we'll play this right now for everyone.
When I first started playing, there was single chain baskets with trays that were about this deep. And you'd hit a putt perfectly, and it would go down into the tray, and it would scoop around the back and flop out. So there was a certain amount of touch you needed to have to make the putt. And then you couldn't just rip it in there. It would blow up, chains would blow apart, it would hit the pole and come back at you, or it would scoop around and go out. So that's kind of why I developed my putt. It was a little bit softer, you know, not quite as hard in there, up to down. So it's going down into the basket, and better off, it's going to have a better chance of catching it if it's going down in the basket. Nowadays, the baskets are this deep. The disc doesn't scoop out the back. There's 48 chains in it, you know, and you can slam them in there, and it catches it. So I think that may be where the game can take a hint from the past and add a little more touch into the game, because ball golf, you have to have touch around the hole.
Perfect speed,
you know, stuff like that. And either a smaller basket or whatever, I think something basket related could be where the game could become tougher.
All right, initial thoughts there, Calvin.
I don't think those are any thoughts that, you know, that haven't been heard before or thought. The basket technology is way different now. I mean, there are a ton more chains, and it actually is like, I agree with some of the points he made. Like one of my least favorite baskets is the Mach X, because of literally how dense it is. And you can throw a disc 80 miles an hour into it, and it's not going to miss. And that's, I do agree with the fact that I feel like we're slowly removing touch from the game. I don't know if we need to go all the way back to single chain baskets. I think there's an element of, you know, kind of flukiness to it. But I do think basket change would be a pretty easy fix to probably, you know, make the game tougher. Maybe not easy. Easy is the wrong word, but it is something that we could do, and it wouldn't be terribly hard to implement. everywhere. So I've kind of felt like making it smaller may be the better solution. But maybe removing some chains also would do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think two things with changing the basket happens, right? With making putting more difficult by having, let's say, a smaller target or something that, you know, a 30-foot putt becomes a little bit more challenging. One, that puts more pressure and also puts more incentive on being able to throw closer to the basket. So yeah. Players that have better accuracy off the tee or approach shots now are more likely to excel than right now. There isn't that much difference between landing 40 feet from the basket and landing 30 feet from the basket. So that's one. And then the second one too, is I think it really allows disc golf designers to set up greens in a way to where now the thought of like, oh, there's a real chance of me missing everything. And now where does the disc end up? So where we see right now, people kind of maybe 50 feet away or 45 feet away, kind of lay up sometimes or play soft to certain baskets when there's trouble behind. I think we could see more of that when there is, you know, 30 feet or something, if the baskets got smaller. Now, I don't want spit outs. And so that's why I've always said I'm cool with just moving in the chains and then moving out the basket. So that way, to me, I feel like if you hit the chains, it should stay in the basket.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to a point, I mean, you don't want to make the tray too big to where if you're hitting one chain, you're still somehow flopping in, I feel like. But
if the chains were moved in quite a bit, hitting one chain is still
okay.
Like, it's still closer to where we are right now, where, you know, that's what I'm saying, is you'd have to move in like 6 inches. I don't know what the number is, but you'd move it in a way to where that is like, it's a much, much more narrow target.
Yeah, I could see that working for sure. I mean, it would definitely take, you know, some testing and, you know, I don't know exactly where you implement those tests and who would be doing them, but I think that's an interesting concept. I don't know how many people have actually tried. I know there are a handful of people out there that have been tweaking around with baskets for a while, but it doesn't really seem like it ever gets that far beyond them just doing it in their backyard.
So there was a couple people in the comments on this. I believe this was posted on, I mean, it was posted everywhere, but there was a couple people that came, some pros. So you had Nico say, when the champ talks, everyone needs to listen. And then you had Zach Melton giving the three kind of preacher hands. So he likes what he hears. And then you had Big Germ. Big Germ kind of went in opposite direction. Big Germ goes, love Climo, and I usually love his opinions. I do not like this take. In my opinion, disc golf evolved to the point where it is now by respecting the player's skill and rewarding proper accuracy with a higher percentage of made putts. Smaller cages, fewer chains, etc. is a regression for professional play in every sense of the word. So I see a little bit of his point of where he's saying like, he wants to have more emphasis on rewarding player skill and accuracy. But what I fail is like making the target harder is actually going to put that emphasis. Someone that throws, you know, to 5 to 10 feet on every hole is no longer going to take the same score as someone that's throwing to 25 feet on every hole. So that's where it's like, I would love to see that be more, more separation is like more emphasis off the tee. And then also just making it to where like a 20-foot putt no longer becomes he misses it. Like that was a huge choke job. More of just like, hey, you're going to miss some every once in a while.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think, at first it'll be tough to kind of adapt as a player, but I think, in the end, yeah, I think people that are more skilled are going to shine in that scenario where the target's harder to hit from any distance. And then, as you were talking about earlier, just, you know, I do think putting is like the most overpowered thing in disc golf and its current state. So If you do make the target a little smaller, if you're a great putter, like you're still going to excel, you're going to be hitting basket and staying close even when you miss, but it does reward those people that are better off the tee, as to where now there's such a big area you can land in if you're a good putter. It's I do think the game's a little imbalanced in that sense.
Yeah. So Simon, actually, I don't know if this was in regards to Climo's post, but this kind of goes hand in hand a little bit. Simon took to Instagram and made this post. He says, disc golf should embrace being easier than golf. This debate has been going on for ages. The scoring is too easy. It makes our sport look bad. Too easy if players shoot double digits under par. People won't take us seriously with scores so low. I disagree. Low scores are not what are holding us back. We're trying to make our scoring tougher by adding OB, making crazy greens, and often players get punished really hard for small mistakes. Gimmicky greens and gimmicky fairways lead to too much randomness in our game. That's what makes us look bad. And all for the sake of trying to get us to score closer to golf scores. How about we just accept that disc golf is easier? We start designing challenging and fair courses, and players will shoot 10 to 16 under par. As long as putting is as easy as it is, these scores should be the norm, in my opinion. Is bowling going to change their game because the pros get a strike almost every time? No. Is darts going to make the field smaller because the pros almost never miss? No. Give us a smaller target to aim for. Give us a smaller or better target to aim for, or let's embrace the fact that disc golf is not like golf. Ooh, that a lot to unpack here. So let's kind of break it down. Do you think the first part he talks about is the idea that scoring is too easy and it kind of makes the sport look bad? Do you agree with those people that say that? Or do you agree with Simon that is not the issue that we should be concerned with?
I do think you have to be concerned with scoring super low on a regular basis, because at some point, like, you have to realize, like, we are a relatively new sport and it's still changing and evolving and people are continuing to push different limits. So when people are shooting 16 down now, I feel like, you know, you're not pushing people to get any better. So I do think courses being too easy is an issue. And I feel like it would prevent, you know, the next generation from pushing, you know, the boundary even farther. And I mean, like, you look at golf, and like, even golf is like changed. Like, courses aren't the same now as they were, whatever, 100 years ago. So I think we do have to be aware of it. I don't see it as like when it happens as it being an issue. I think it's just like, okay, this is happening. This course either needs to change or we need to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I agree with him in this take where he's saying, you know, making greens super gimmicky or making fairways super gimmicky to add the randomness to the game. I think that is a bad look. It's the same thing as I've always said, is like, when we play in the woods and you have trees 300, 350 feet down the fairway in the fairway, that also adds the randomness to disc golf, of where you're not rewarding good shots and you're making it to where some people's good shots get punished. So those things I'm not a fan of by any means, but I'm with you. I think twofold. One, it was interesting that the two sports that he listed bowling and darts. I would say both those sports are pretty niche, and neither one of them, I could be wrong, but neither one of them has really probably gained all that much attraction or a following over the years, because there's what can you do with those sports, right? Bowling, for example, they've done some things where like lanes are different, so the oil patterns are different from one lane to the next. Yeah. But that's something as a viewer is very hard for me to kind of get any sort of idea of what that actually is. And I think that actually holds back the sports. I've always said, I don't think disc golf going towards the dart realm of where guys are just stepping up and just executing. I don't think that's the right way. The one thing that disc golf has that bowling and darts don't have is strategy. game management, decision making. There really isn't that much in darts and bowling. It's more of like, this is the right thing to do. Can you execute it? And I know there's going to be some darts and bowling people and being like, oh, you don't know what I'm talking. For the most part, that is kind of how it is. It's, can you execute when the pressure is on? And I feel like disc golf, the part that really attracts me is the decision-making. What is Calvin going to do here? Versus if you make it to where it's just cut and dry, this is what you need to do. Who can execute it the best? I think we miss a huge part there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that's just part of golf or any sport that's a derivative or, you know, came from golf. Decision making is pretty important, and honestly, like, it kind of ties back into some course design sometimes. And when I look at courses I don't like, it's because there is really no decision to be made. It's just like, it's more like darts. You either do it or you execute or you don't. And like, we see some courses like that where it's like, you don't execute, you go to the drop zone, and it's like, you don't execute from the drop zone, you go to the next drop zone, and that starts to get more towards, you know, the darts realm, I feel like. I don't think that's very, very fun, because it's, there is no choices to be made. Everyone's trying to do the exact same thing. And it's just completely execution at that point, and no one can kind of approach a course in their own way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing that goes into me, like, going against this idea of shooting 10 to 16 under par, if I was trying to beat you, let's say me and you had a bet, and I was trying to do everything I could to beat you, I would take you on a course that was easy. I wouldn't go to a hard course. I would go to a course where there might be one or two holes that I think I might not birdie, but the other 16 I'm birding every single time. Because in that course, now I only have to beat you on one or two holes. And there's a chance for me to beat you on one or two holes. Versus me trying to beat you on 18 holes, the more holes that add in the variability, the difficulty, the less likely I have at beating you. And so when you end up playing these courses, and these courses that we shoot 10 to 16 under par, when you end up playing these courses that have two or three holes that the majority of the top field are birding, you now are limiting the number of holes to be able to, like, separate yourself from the field. So that's where it's like, I don't think we should be going towards the direction of easy just to be easy. But we also shouldn't be going in the direction of hard to be hard. It needs to be fair. So I agree with him on that. I'm not for the gimmicky greens. I'm not for the gimmicky fairways. I'm not for any of that. But we got to find a way to make courses where people that are throwing well, people that are putting well, score well, and people that aren't are not scoring well.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And that's easier said than done. But and I do think sometimes we're gonna, as courses are evolving, you know, there's gonna be things that maybe were too hard, and that's okay. Well, we figure that out, and you fix it for the next year. But I don't think, you know, a lot of courses aren't just like completely tearing themselves up and trying a completely new layout the next year. It's like there might be two or three changes, and you know, you kind of see what was good, what was bad, and you know, maybe you change something back or you make a few more the next year. So I don't know. I think it's all kind of a slow progression, but you know, we are slowly figuring out what's working and what's not. And it's also a balance of figuring out what's working now. Is it going to work in 5 years or is it not? Like, are we going to be that much better? You know, so as a hole that's too hard now, it's just going to be a standard hole, you know?
Exactly. And I guess, you know, maybe I can try to talk to Simon a little bit more about what his thoughts are on this, because it is always interesting when good players have this thought, right? Like, when good players are like, no, we should keep going this direction of easy. I feel like you want the opposite. I think you want to make it as hard as possible because that benefits you more. The players that are lower in the field, they want courses to be super easy because there's just less scoring separation. So maybe I can chat with him and get a little more thoughts on that. But always going to be an interesting thing when we come to what scores are, because there's also a lot of people that love just seeing 16 under. And then there's a bunch of people that love seeing like 2, 4, 5 under be a good round. So it'll be interesting. All right, let's talk a little player movement. There hasn't been too much action this offseason. We're still just in November, so still plenty of time. A lot of people's contracts, we kind of went over a couple episodes ago, how many contracts are kind of up on the table. We haven't really heard much, but we did get one signing. This is from Joseph Anderson. Joseph Anderson signs a two-year deal with Castiplas. He's potentially a rookie of the year this year. He had a couple really good finishes towards the end of the year. He got 12th at USDGC, and he got a top 20 at MVP Open. So Castiplas signs 2 years. It'll be interesting to kind of see how Castiplas, Discmania, Latitude, all Trilogy, Westside, how dynamic, how they all go now that they kind of are all under the same umbrella. This was like the first signing that we've seen. Now, everyone pay attention to Calvin here. If you're watching live right now, we'll see if we can get any sort of intel off this next rumor. So this rumor was broken on Grip Locked on Monday by Hunter. He said someone DM'd him this and said that his friend played in a tournament with Emerson Keith, who said he's going to be signing with Innova. Do you have any thoughts on that, Calvin?
I haven't talked to Emerson recently, and honestly, I really haven't talked to anyone at Innova recently, so I don't have any insights on that. I do know that Emerson was shopping around. He was talking to me about that before the season was over. Maybe it was at the Pro Tour finale when I last saw him. But
did he just do 1 year with Lone Star?
Yep, he had a 1 year deal there with Lone Star. Yeah, I believe he was with Latitude the year before.
Prior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think he had that 1 year deal with Lone Star, and then I do know he was shopping around again. So it'll be interesting to see if he did end up going. You know, with Innova, he did have that big win out at OTB this year. So I'm sure he's looking to kind of get paid for that, and you know, looking for someone that, you know, he's got a family too, so it's one to support him and allow him to keep doing this, and while he still can financially provide for his family.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that goes with Lone Star, right? Lone Star ends up signing a whole bunch of players last offseason. The biggest name was probably Nico LaCastro.
Yeah.
But I think you could argue that Emerson probably had a better season with that win than Nico did. And so it would be interesting to kind of see when this all settles, how it all worked out. Was it one of those situations where Lone Star still wanted to move forward with Nico being their kind of face of their brand? And Emerson was like, hey, I won a elite event last year. Not that many people did that. I want to go forward and be more of a, I don't know, face, I guess, for the brand. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens. But that was the first real rumor that's kind of been started, I guess, right now, is Emerson to Innova. So we'll see kind of how that goes. All right, moving on, we've got UDisc. UDisc dropped stats for the 2023 season. There's two things, Calvin. Here comes the balloons. I forgot that. Oh, they weren't ready for me. Have you seen the balloons yet, Calvin?
I haven't.
There you go. Now you've seen the balloons. There they are. So there's two things that I think would increase disc golf views, whether it's live or on social media. And those two things, betting. So if we can get, I know Prize Picks was in it for a little bit, but I don't think they had the resources to set good lines. But betting, you're going to get a bunch of new people to just tune in for their bets. And then the second thing is statistics. I think getting better stats, having stuff to where the commentators can make the coverage better, having stuff for media like this podcast to where we can discuss statistics. Those are the two things I think that would actually help disc golf grow. And here we have UDisc providing us with some pretty cool stats. So we're going to go through these real quick. Hopefully Silas can pull them up and you can actually see them. If not, Calvin, I will kind of read them off to you and the listeners as well. So the first one here is the best circle one putters for the 2023 season. These are all MPO stats too. So we've got Andrew Marweed, who actually breaks his previous record last year and putts 93.1% from circle one. Insane. Then we have James Proctor at 90, Chandler Fry 89.5, Blair at 89.4, Paul Kranz at 88.8, our Tour Life co-host Paul Uelberry 88.6, Colt Montgomery 88.4. I don't know this name at all. Elias Matilia must be some European player because they only made 126 out of 143, so they didn't play that many events. 88.1, Eagle at 88, and then Simon at 87.3. Any names on here surprise you? Anything from this list that jump out at you?
I mean, not really. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't really read the text here, but the guy that you weren't familiar with, I don't know him. But nothing too surprising. I mean, I definitely, you know, we were talking about earlier in the year how well Proctor was putting, and then we always know how well Andrew's putting, Chandler as well. So, I mean, none of these names are that surprising. I mean, I see that we have, like, the amount of putts made, and then, I mean, is the third line the attempts, I'm guessing?
Yeah, so you have putts made versus putts attempted. So you have, like, Marweed ended up missing only 46 putts out of 666. So that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really good.
Someone in chat real quick just said, it's interesting that the top five putters didn't win big events. Interesting.
Yeah.
Top eight, right? No one. Yeah, Eagle was the only one that did. Eagle
Beaver
won.
State.
Yeah,
which was a silver series, and then he won another silver series, this Mania Open, I believe. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of those things where it doesn't always translate. You have to throw it there. That's why. I think, I don't know, it, like, just looking at the stat individually definitely never tells the whole picture. That's why there's more than putting's more isn't the only aspect of the game. But I would also be interested to see the breakdown on, like, where these putts were made from, you know, like,
that's big for me. Yeah.
Because, like, you know, you can have someone throwing it into circle two a lot and then they're missing their next putt to like 15 feet. And then it's like, they're basically tapping in. But I mean, I don't know. None of those names are that surprising to me. They're all putters that I've definitely, you know, watched and seen do incredible things on the course. But I do think it is surprising that none of them really did win.
Yeah. Now C2 putting, this tells a little bit more of a story as far as if we're translating to win. You have Gannon Burr leading the way at 40.4%. I did not know he was that high. That's ridiculous.
That's really good.
Matty O's at 37.1%. Nate Metzler is at 37%, but he only made 20 putts. So yeah. I don't know if that really, it's super low, right? Ricky Wysocki, 36.8%. James Proctor, 35.8%. Corey Ellis, 34.6%. Ties with Matt Bell. Marweed again at 34%. Reed Frisquera at 33, also tied with Chandler Fry at 33. So this tells a little bit more of a story, I think, as far as, like, what translates more to wins, right? Because you've got people like Gannon Burr, Matty O, and Ricky Wysocki all in the top four. And then you have a major champion winner right there at number six with Corey Ellis. So 40.4, though, that is, man, that has to be the first time anyone's ever played a full season and was over 40% for circle two putting. That seems so high.
That's incredibly high. I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, yeah, because I mean, he basically played every event. So, I mean, it's not like he's got a large sample size.
He made the most circle two putts out of everyone at 167 out of 413. Yeah. So he made a lot. That's saving so many strokes right there. Next one we have, this one's an interesting one. Longest streak Longest streak with no missed circle one putts goes to ours truly, Paul Ulberry, 148 circle one putts in a row, spanning from hole 17, round three at Preserve, all the way to the European Open, round three, hole two. So it sounds like he missed a circle one putt on that par five at European Open. Probably just had like an uphill putt.
Hole two is the forehand.
It says last hole in the streak. So I'm guessing hole three is when it got broken.
Yep, you're right there. Yeah.
So he probably just had like a tough uphill, like 30 footer or something. Might have laid that up, honestly, if it was like kind of a scary putt. But shout out to Paul. That's impressive. 146 or 148 putts in a row inside a circle without a miss. That is solid stuff right there.
Really, like my streak would have been like seven.
You think you're single digits?
maybe 12. Maybe 12. I don't know.
Maybe someone from UDIS that's watching this can look up what Calvin's longest streak of made circle one putts is. Someone give us that data. We'll send that over to you next week. All right, this next one's interesting. So this is a new stat that UDIS came out with. It's called the Precise Power Index, the PPI. This is the higher a player's average PPI, so the higher the number, the more accurate that they've proven to be when throwing distance shots. So for MPO, shots over 400 feet is what this is calculating. Calvin, you're sitting at number one here. Number one in the PPI, this is at 54.2. Next closest, Simon Lizotte at 50.9. And then we actually have a bunch of European players on here too. Like half the field here is European. And then we also have Eagle, AB, and Jake Hebenheimer also on this list as well. So these are all guys. Again, I'm not surprised with any of these names. These are all people that throw far, but also accurately. So this is, this kind of goes back to, you know, why have you been so successful on tour? Well, any hole that's over 400 feet, you're doing pretty good on it, which also probably makes you want to have probably more holes that require. Because again, when you increase the distance, right? If we have a 300 foot hole versus a 400 foot hole, if you're off by a little bit on the 300 foot hole, you probably could still make birdie. If you're off a little bit on the 400 foot hole, a birdie is much more difficult. So this is where you kind of being as accurate as you are helps a little bit more, right?
Yeah, I think that is definitely the case. I think, you know, me personally, I guess I would love all the holes to be longer, but I think the mistakes definitely get amplified as you know stretch the course a little bit longer. You know, people are starting to, I just think faster discs are also a little bit touchier. There's a little more movement in the flight and, you know, more things to go wrong.
No, for sure. And also, you know, you're having some people have to, you know, throw maybe a hyzer flip or having something to, or a flex to get that distance. So that definitely involves a little bit more error as well. All right, the next stat, I want to talk a little bit about this because I think this one actually needs to change. So this is the best fairway hit rate from the 2023 season. You have Albert Hinton at 81.2%, and then yourself is at 80.5%. Followed by Cale LaViska at 78.9. Some other notable names on here. You have Isaac in the top five, Chris Dickerson and Nicholas Antilla, both in the top 10. Now, what I want to talk about this, though, is this is the definition of a fairway hit. So fairway hits only cover players' first shots on par threes and par fours. On a par three, a player's drive has to come to rest within C2 to count as a fairway hit. On a par four, the player's first shot needs to be in the fairway, not in the woods, not OB, not in a hazard, or in C2. On a par five, a player can earn 0, 1, or 2 fairway hits. If a player's first shot lands in the fairway, it counts as a fairway hit. A player's second shot can land in the fairway or in C2 and also count as a fairway hit. This is my thoughts on this. I don't like fairway hits as a part of par threes. I think those I don't think they should be added in there. And I think it should only be your tee shot on par fives. But I think it should only be tee shots on par fours, tee shots on par fives. That is your fairway hit percentage.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely fair. I think, I don't know. I guess greens in regulation does kind of cover the par three. So it's not
you're getting a double dip. Yeah, you're getting a double dip situation there, which doesn't really make too much sense.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right, where par threes are definitely covered already with greens in regulation. And, you know, I guess the flip side is like, what if you shank it on a par three? Like, what? I mean, you are getting punished on not hitting a green in regulation, but like, you're also not hitting a fairway. But I guess you're really not trying to hit a fairway on a par three.
There's not really a par. That's my thing. Is there's like, I don't think you should be able to. I mean, I'm happy that you have to land in C2 at least, right? So you can't lay up, let's say, into the imaginary fairway, and that counts, but. Yeah, I think you kind of just double dip in that scenario. And then the reason why I don't like it being the second shot for a par five is there are sometimes where you might just be in a really bad spot after your drive. You're already penalized with missing the fairway on your drive. I don't think you should get double penalized for not being able to scramble out of the woods to get back into the fairway, right? So that's where I think, again, this all... The whole reason for all these stats is for us to get a better picture. And so I think removing those two, I think that gives us a better picture of who is landing in the fairway off their tee shot. That's what I want to see. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that makes a lot of sense. That does seem to be the primary, intent of the stat is to see who's hitting the fairway off the tee. And with par threes already being covered, I could see that just being completely thrown out. And now you're seeing who's hitting the fairways on the fours and fives. And it probably tells a better story than, including them all together.
Because a perfect example of that is, let's say you throw a perfect tee shot on, is it hole 12 at Northwood Black, the par five?
Yeah.
Yeah, you throw a perfect tee shot, right? And then you throw your second shot and it just barely skips left into the rough. I don't think you should get penalized for the fairway not being hit there. So there's certain par fives, especially where it's your second shot's kind of fluky whether or not you're going to be in the fairway anyway. So I think that actually clears up the stat a little bit. All right, this one I'll just jump real quick. This is biggest jumps in disc golf world ranking. I'm not super, I don't think this tells me too much because a lot of these players are Europeans that just didn't play that much. So they had low world rankings, and I think because there was a lot more tournaments now in Europe, that Paul going over there, a lot of people going over there and playing, I think that moves some of these people up. So, but some of these that are notable, I think James Proctor went from 41st in the world to 16th. Ezra Robinson had an incredible year. He went from 47th in the world to 19th. And then the other one I would say is Zach Arlinghouse. Zach Arlinghouse went from 120 to 66, moving up 54 spots. Yeah. So some good movement from some of these players as well. And again, this is a statistic that the more people are playing, I think consistently, that actually will factor in a little bit more. But for right now, it's kind of it's tough to see.
I'm guessing that was based off of their ranking system as well, right?
Correct. That's got to be off of UDisc. Yeah. Okay. All right. To run through a little bit, I'm just going to do kind of top fives here. So top five highest birdie rates, you have Calvin, Eagle, Ricky, Gannon, and Paul. Then you've got most eagles, Calvin again at the top by four. Holy smokes. Then you've got Gossage, AB, Eagle, Hebenheimer, Kevin Jones, Ty Love, all in fifth. Lowest bogey rates, Paul Kranz, he only bogeyed 12 holes out of 162. That's a wild stat. Cale LaViska only bogeyed 17 holes out of 216. And then Paul, it was at 78 bogeys out of 968. And then Calvin, 128 bogeys, but out of 1,438. So pretty impressive there. Longest bogey free streak. Eagle McMahon, 95 holes without a bogey. That was from Champions Cup round two, hole one, the Jonesboro Open round three, hole five. So he bogeyed hole six. So he probably went for the birdie. Or no, he probably just went OB. That's the island hole.
Yeah, that's the island hole.
Yeah, so he just probably threw it OB, and there he goes. First bogey. Crazy right there. Best scramble rates. I'm not even going to list these because this is another statistic that I think is broken. I think scramble, the way that they have it listed here, the scramble stat tracks a player's ability to recover from an off-target drive and avoid carding a bogey. If a player ever throws OB or off the fairway and still earns par or better on a hole, they've successfully scrambled. There is a massive difference between throwing off the fairway and getting a par and throwing OB and getting a par. So I think if we're looking more just at the stats, if I want to know who throws a shot in a bad spot and can still get up and down, throwing OB doesn't, and getting up and down from there doesn't really tell me that much because you're not really scrambling a lot of times. Like you're just in kind of the fairway still, but you just have to get up and down. The scramble I want to know is like when you're in the woods, right? Like when you're off and you're having to throw a crazy shot to kind of get back. To me, I think that's a more valuable stat. What are your thoughts on the scramble?
Yeah, I kind of agree, but I don't know. I guess it's kind of, so what are you calling, you know, someone that throws out of bounds and still gets up and down, you know? I don't know. They are still,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you would, I don't know what you would necessarily call that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think,
you know, there's some instances where if you throw a B off the tee, you have no chance at a par. So to me, that makes no sense that you're getting double penalized. Again, from a stat standpoint, if I'm trying to figure out who's really good at scrambling, that doesn't really help me if you're, you know, throwing OB and now your second shot is 500 feet away. Like, well, yeah, you're probably not going to get up and down from there.
Yeah. I don't know if like scrambling should, I don't know if the stat has to like take into, I mean, if you throw that bad of a first shot, you know, you're getting punished there. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you still are scrambling when you're thrown out of bounds, but I do get what you're saying. Like when you think about scrambling in the traditional sense, if you talk about scrambling, I instantly think about someone in the woods off the fairway.
Yeah.
That is the first thing I think about. But then again, like a bunch of the courses we play, that's not even a thing that happens, you know, like
someone suggested recovery stat.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see that you have a recovery stat for, you know, whatever.
That gives me a little bit more information on, okay, this person went OB a bunch, but they were able to somehow save par with the recovery percentage versus, oh, this person was just not able to stay in the fairway at all, like on a wooded course, but they were still able to make par. Like they were scrambling really well. Those are two different.
Yeah, they are definitely different, but I also think, it might get a little jumbled if you look at like a scramble stat on a season, but generally like we have our wooded courses and our open courses. So if you're looking at that stat for an individual event, it's probably, you know, it would either be the recovery stat or the scramble stat. I don't think it's very often you're going to be having events that like are like half and half dipping into, you know, both of those stats. I think a lot of the time it's kind of going to be either one or the other.
Yeah, there's only a couple tournaments that we play now that have us on like a wooded course and an open course. It's kind of one or the other. So,
yeah.
All right. I don't know if you heard about this. You probably didn't. You probably have other things going on, but I have to address it. So there was some sort of post made on Facebook or something. I think this one actually was something in regards to like who sells the most discs. And it had a list of a bunch of different people. And this was someone's response. Someone's response was, and again, I'm going to read this word for word. Okay. So do not come after me. This is from Brian Sage. Wow. That went crazy. Oh, wait, no, sorry. That's a different. Wait, he went. What was the first one? This is the first one. Okay. So his response was Brody. We spelled it without the R. Even though he's no really good, that good. LOL. Don't see him winning anything or even making chase card. LOL. Or close. LOL. I don't even consider him a pro disc golfer. LOL. I probably beat him. LOL. So I responded. Well, first off, I looked him up, right? He has his name here. So I looked him up. Shout out to the PDGA for making it really easy to look players up. So I responded saying, Brian Sage, is this you? Brian Sage, number 173862. I see you're close to Toboggan. I'll play you there for $1,000. Now, did I look up and see that his rating was like 800 something and he plays an MA3? Yes, I did. I had to make sure that I could beat him, right? So I hit him with that. Someone followed it up. Shout out to Eli Bowman. Eli Bowman followed it up saying, I'll give him $1,000 just to show up and play you. Real talk, let me know. Brian Sage responded to that saying, I will. I play him for $100. I got that to lose. I definitely won't win, but I'd love to see how close I could get on one of my home courses. So he just changed up real quick whether or not. He finishes off with this. Wow, that went crazy fast. LOL. Toboggan is closed at the moment. LOL. But I also don't get a grand to lose. LOL. But I'm only spitting my opinion. You're going to have to get used to that if you're going to be professional. LOL. I just never seen you play at any of these guys' level on this post. But I bet you sell more. But if you want people to take you seriously, play better, win, or compete with these pros. I would definitely play around with you and get beat for my comments. But I said what I said. Win something before you compare yourself to these guys in this post. So first off, wasn't my post, right? Someone else posted this. I don't know how you would respond to this, Calvin, but this is my thing. Pro disc golfers are going to be ridiculed, criticized. They're going, I mean, we do it in the NFL. We talk about there are 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. However, we literally say that some of these guys suck. They suck. This guy sucks at quarterback. When in fact, he is one of the best 32 in the world. But in the grand scheme of things, he sucks in comparison. Yes. Does like Zach Wilson suck? Yeah. He sucks in comparison to Patrick Mahomes. But does he suck compared to me and you? Absolutely not. So that was my only take on it is I'm completely fine if you say I suck towards other people. And I probably do. You're probably right. But if you call me out and say that you could beat me, be ready for me to show up. I will fly. I'm serious. I will fly to Detroit and play you for $1,000. I'm not joking. I'll make easy money there. And also it'd be great content. How would you respond to this though? If you saw, I might be a little bit different than some because I do actually have fun with this and I do enjoy the back and forth a little, but how would you respond if, let's say you couldn't ignore it. Let's say you had to respond because you probably would ignore it. But if you couldn't ignore it and you had to respond, what are you going with?
What am I going with? Man.
Correct. Someone says you're trash. You're never going to win a major. I could beat you. No problem.
I mean, I think I would just say show up at the next event. We'll see who wins.
Yes. Okay. I love that.
I don't think I'm flying out to go beat him. I feel like that's giving them more time of day than they deserve. Well,
content, but Calvin, content. I got a YouTube channel. I got to make YouTube videos, brother.
I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I don't know. And everyone has one. So I don't think there's really, it's worth putting too much time and thought into most of them. It's just like, if you really feel that way, show up. You know, sure.
Can I give you a suggestion?
You know exactly where I'm going to be playing. Like, you know, I'm going to be at all the tour stops. So just find your way to get into one of them and we'll see if you beat me.
A dark horse move, Calvin, would be for you to Venmo him the amount of money it is to register for the event or pre-register somehow and be like, hey, I registered you. See you in Florida for the Florida Open, brother.
Yeah. Sponsor exemption or something.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it's always fun. I always get a kick out of it when I see people chirp on Twitter, on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is. All right, this week in Foundation Disc Golf, what went down? A lot went down. If you missed it, here are some of the highlights. So first things first, we had Robbie, Connor, and Trevor go out to the, I guess you'd call it like an ace course or a tiki course, I guess might be the actual name, where all the holes are aceable. And it's a really fun course to make content on. And they're playing this like ace challenge where you only had 20 throws, but if you hit metal, you gain 5 throws back. And they got to see, like, could you ace at some point before finishing out? This was what happened. So,
oh, Silas, no metal.
Silas, throw up Robbie here.
Oh,
that was
come on.
Too far. Oh, thank you, Basket. No way.
All right, so for our listeners at home, what ended up happening, there's a railing short of the basket. And by short, I mean like 10 feet short. All right, Silas, so you can pull it down. 10 feet short of the basket's a railing. He throws a forehand. It skips off the top of the railing, goes into the basket. Do you have any crazy aces like that where it skips off of some sort of object?
Nothing's coming to mind at the moment.
Bounces off of a house. Do you have a tree ace? Like a kick off of a tree into the basket?
I mean, no, nothing that's like super noticeable where it would have been like a kick close to the basket. And then I'm trying to think.
Most of yours just go straight in.
Yeah, or just like a little skip off the ground. It's very possible that I'm forgetting something, but no.
Well, you did have that one at Northwood where like your putter blew up when you threw the tomahawk.
Yeah, that one was crazy. It was so crazy that I forgot about it.
That one was maybe your craziest. All right, so if you thought that was crazy, this is what happened right after the next hole. Go ahead and run it, Silas.
Oh, no. Oh!
So again, the breakdown of this, I think I might have had the perfect comment in response to this. It was the ugliest and most beautiful throw I've ever seen in my entire life. He completely rolls his wrist on a forehand and just straight turfs it. There's so many leaves, though, that it hits on Annie and then kind of catches edge on the leaves and then pops up on Heiser, skips again, double skips into the basket. I mean, again, if you're listening, go to Foundation Disc Golf's Instagram to watch both of these. These were back-to-back crazy aces that you just, I mean, it's when I saw that, I was like, of course it happened to Connor. This is also the same guy that went out to a hole and he had to ace it for in a live stream. And it's like a 230, 240 foot hole downhill, nothing in the way. He was out there for 8 hours, never did it. He streamed for eight hours straight, never did it. And then he pulls that off. So super impressive. Hunter's Break 68 series also just dropped. A new episode dropped today. If you haven't watched that, go check it out. I play New London with only a passion to kind of show the difference in what is possible out there. If you kind of just play smart, we'll see if Hunter can ever do it. The last thing in the Foundation world, the Foundation Disc Golf Creator Academy. So Calvin, this is what happened. This is what's going on in our world. Okay. This is the problem with our world today. People see something and then they don't read everything. They don't watch everything. They just assume, and then they just throw it out there as a fact. So the issue that we had was Hunter came out with a video explaining what the Foundation Disc Golf Creator Academy is. It's basically a way for up-and-coming YouTube creators or social media creators to have a network of people and to use us as a resource to kind of help them along their social media journey, if you will. People thought that we were charging for this, when in fact it's completely free and we never said anything about charging it. So if you're listening and you thought we were charging, you might be missing out. It's completely free. If you're interested, check it out. If you're not, no big deal. What do you have to say, though, about Calvin, the people that see something, make a judgment on it, and then just blast it out without, and I've been at fault for doing this multiple times, but what can we do to get better at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just doing your due diligence. I mean, it's very easy to just, you know, see something at its initial face value and make a judgment, you know, and it can be terribly wrong because you just may have completely misinterpreted the situation. I think we're all guilty of that at some point or another. It's hard just to, it can be hard to just always, you know, do your due diligence and read everything and see everything for what it actually is. And, we're always going to make those mistakes, but all we can do is just try our best to not, and make sure if we are going to make a comment or a judgment, and, you know, especially make it public and not just leave it in our head, just make sure we know what we're talking about before we do it.
That's why I like this podcast, honestly, because a lot of times it's like, I don't necessarily have the time to maybe research every single topic as much as I would want to. So I like bringing people on that are experts or people that are involved in that topic to not only inform me of what's going on, but also inform the audience too. So that is kind of a cheat code I have, I guess, with the podcast. All right. Pace of play article. I kind of want to brush over this real quick. This was an article that was put out. When was this put out? This was put out in 2023, April 19th, this was a Golf Digest article. So this is golf specific, but again, disc golf, very similar to golf. So this article is called the Seven Sins of Slow Play. So Calvin, what's your stance on slow play, just so we can get it on the record?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of slow play. You wait on the people in front of you over and over again. It gets very frustrating because I do think part of our game is getting in a rhythm. And when you have those weird stop moments that, like, you're not anticipating or you just don't regularly have, I think it does affect you. It's hard to just get into the mental zone or even just, you know, stay warm at times. So I do think, you know, I don't know. I think it's really just, yeah, cards in front of you holding you up. If it was always the same pace, I don't think it would be an issue, but, you know, it's like when you're catching up when you're catching up to people and waiting, it is an issue. But if we all just really played really slow, it probably wouldn't be that big of an issue.
See, now I disagree a little bit with that because I don't think it'd be an issue for us, but I think it'd be an issue for spectators. I think a big thing that we should be thinking about is how do we make disc golf more digestible to the fans and the people watching at home? I don't think disc golf rounds should be taking 4 hours. We don't walk that far. We don't throw that far. We don't take forever to putt. There's a lot of things that should speed up pace of play. Now, obviously, we play in foursomes. I think if we got to threesomes, twosomes in the future, that would definitely help. But to me, man, if I think it's so much easier to sell someone on sitting down on their couch on Saturday or Sunday for 2 hours than it is like, hey, sit down for six.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I don't know if we're going to be, I mean, even if you played in a twosome on a lot of our courses, I don't know if you're going to get yourself down to a 2 hour round.
Yeah, I mean, 2 hours might be on the low end for some courses. I want to say, is there a way that we can look up? Can you look up old rounds, how fast you played? Cause I know at, what's the GMC, what's the secondary course out there? It's the open course.
Fox Meadows. Run.
Fox Run. Why did I say Meadows? Fox Run. Let me see if this will work here. If I pull up my rounds. Do I not have any rounds out there? Dang. I don't have anything on UDIS. Me, Corey Ellis, and Colton played. We were the first ones out. We played in a threesome. And this was, if you remember, this was 2 years ago when those storms rolled in the final day, really bad. You guys had to play pretty much the whole round in terrible storms. We saw that weather was going to be an issue. So we all agreed on the first tee, like, hey, if we play really quickly, we might get out of here before the weather gets bad. And I think it started raining on us on hole 16. So we almost made it all the way through without. We played so much faster though. So it is like, I think sub 2 hours is probably unfeasible, but there is a massive difference between like a 2 hour and 45 minute round and like a 4 hour round. Yeah. Here are some of the things that are causing slow play in golf. You have the idle waiting. So what this is basically when you're just watching everyone do their warm-up routine. And then when they throw, then you start your warm-up routine. You take out your rangefinder to see how far it is. You do all your practice throws. You start trying to figure out what disc you're trying to throw versus having that all figured out while they're kind of doing their thing. That saves a whole lot of time. Bag mismanagement. This is not a huge one for us, but I have seen it happen. If you set your bag on the wrong side of the hole, I mean, again, we're going to the nitty gritty here, but if you set your bag on the wrong side of the hole, after you make a putt, you have to now go walk to get your bag and then walk back across. If you put your bag in the right spot, saves you a little bit of time. Cart mismanagement. We don't have carts, so we don't have to worry about that. This one, surprisingly, this is the, did I ever tell you about the time? We all relish the social opportunities that golf provides because it can be the perfect setting for catching up with friends and family, but that does not license to tell intricate stories on the tee box when someone is lining up a putt or when everyone else has their eyes glued to the ground looking for an errant tee shot. You'd be surprised. This happens on the pro tour where you'll just get people starting to like have a conversation on the tee box and like no one, we're not waiting on anyone, but like someone's just like trying to finish their story. You would think that wouldn't really happen in like professional golf, but it does in disc golf as well. The other one I would say for me that really stands out for pace of play, the rest are kind of more golf specific, but the other one that stands out for me is just the walking speeds, man. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? The walking speeds, like we could save so much time just by walking quicker.
Yeah. It's not even, I guess it is walking quicker, but I think like just getting down the fairway, you know, there are times where you're playing with people and there's zero urgency to get down the fairway at all. And I feel like there is quite a bit of time wasted just waiting for someone to walk, you know? And like, it's like, you're not going to expect like, you know, the last guy on the box, so, you know, be the first one down the fairway, especially, you know, like I feel like I'm pretty quick off the box a lot of times. Same with like Ricky, like I'm not expecting that guy to be up there with me, you know, if they were the last one to go. But like there are times where you get down there and I feel like I can see my disc and maybe it's not my turn to throw. And I've already game planned my next shot before the person that's supposed to throw even gets to their disc. And it's like, man, just a little bit of urgency and like understanding that like it's your turn. You need to get up here would go quite a long way.
Yeah. A little hustle could help. I posted something. Did you see it was like a clip that kind of went viral, I guess, in the disc golf world, not really outside the disc golf world, but this guy was kind of going around colleges and interviewing a bunch of girls saying like, what is the most attractive sport a guy can play? And like, what is a sport that you don't want to see a guy play? And she ends up saying like Frisbee golf. So then like all us disc golfers or whatever, like throw a sick clip right after she says that. Right.
Yeah.
Lot of people got really upset that she said Frisbee golf. And so I made a post that said, listen, if you're upset with people saying Frisbee golf instead of disc golf, you better not be saying ball golf instead of golf. You better be calling it golf, because that is the same situation. Getting upset because someone calls it Frisbee golf, you're doing the same exact thing by calling it ball golf and not golf. So this kind of goes back to an argument I've had for a while, all the way back to debate night, which was the beginning of what this show has turned into. I've dropped it now to where I don't care whether you call it frisbee golf. I've actually never really cared if you call it frisbee golf. For a long time, though, I did get really offended with people calling it ball golf because I was like, it's not ball golf, it's golf. At this point, I don't really care. All I'm saying is, if you care about frisbee golf, you better not call it ball golf.
That's fair. That's completely fair.
And then people are like, well, if I say golf, how do you know what I'm talking about? Like, well, if you say golf, I'm assuming you're saying golf. If you say disc golf, I'm assuming you're saying disc golf. That's how I know what you're talking about.
So, yeah, it was the original. It doesn't need the secondary descriptor.
Yeah. But there are, I get it. There are people that didn't play golf or didn't play other sports and have only really played disc golf. So they just call it golf amongst their friends, right? And they all know what they're talking about. That just doesn't work when you go like outside that sphere. It's kind of similar to like someone coming over here from Europe and saying football. We all think throwing the ball, touchdown, NFL. We don't think soccer. So a little bit in the same. All right, you love these. I think we had last time you were on, or two times ago, we had one of these on here and you got a little chuckle. So hopefully you'll get one here too. Lost disc etiquette. So this was a post, I think this was on Reddit somewhere. The person says, did you lose a disc at Arcadia Park? The guy responds, what disc? And then the other guy responds, you tell me what you lost. He responds with, I haven't played there before yet, but I've had instances where I've had lost discs appear at other courses. So then he responds with, okay, a dark one. And then he responds back saying, dude, just tell me what the disc is. Don't understand why you're acting like a jerk. I've lost multiples over there in the last few weeks. So what is the disc golf etiquette? If you find someone's disc, it's got a number on it. Are you needing them to tell you what the disc is for you to feel like it is theirs?
No, I think if I'm going through the trouble and calling the person whose number is already on the disc, I've already accepted that it's their disc. Like their phone number's on it, and I'm calling this number for a reason, to get the disc back, or at least try to. So why do they need to tell me what disc it is? I don't quite get that. But yeah, I think if you're going to go out, I don't know. That's a weird situation. I don't quite understand what's going on. It's like they want to keep the disc, but they wanted to let the person know that they're going to keep their disc almost. But
yeah, I'm not entirely sure. So if you're listening to this, if you ended up posting this and you're listening to it, please reach out and let us know what ended up happening from this. If anything, did you get the disc back? What went on? There was another instance that someone talked about where they reached out to the person to said like, hey, I found your disc. And then I guess they proceeded to play a couple holes with the disc and ended up losing it on a different hole. So then they reached back out saying, hey, I actually ended up losing the disc, which is a worse nightmare because the guy said that he, and originally this was a story that was sent in for another one of our podcasts, but he was saying that he lost the disc. He was looking for it. He was running out of time and was like, I'll just come back a day from now and look for it. So now he has no idea where the disc is because someone just picked it up and lost it on another hole. So
that's tough.
I feel like if you are going to do that, which I'm not suggesting, if you find a disc, you probably shouldn't play with it. But if you are going to, you probably shouldn't message the person until after to be like, hey, I still have it.
Yeah, that would be the safe play for yourself, for sure.
All right, we're going to try something here. We've got time, so I want to try this with you. If this is a hit, if you guys are listening and you like this, we can do more of this. I don't think I'm going to be very good at this, Calvin, so I might need you to carry me here. We're going to try a disc golf sporkle. Do you know anything about sporkle?
No.
Okay. If you guys like this also, you can by all means go out and create your own sporkles. Then me and Yuli or whoever, if Calvin comes back, we can all try more. This is a website that is user-generated. So users can go on and create their own quizzes, and then we basically take the quiz and try to do the best. So So the one I picked, I feel like we should be okay at. I don't know. I mean, there was one where it was like, name every major champion from like ever. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to know any of those.
Oh, it's disc golf trivia. Oh, gosh.
So it's not really trivia. It's a little bit different. So what we're going to try to do, Calvin, is we're going to have 10 minutes to try to name as many discs as we can that were used by the top 10 MPO players in the 2021 disc golf pro season. Now, Calvin, you are one of these people. So I'm hoping we can at least get all of yours. So let me give you the names because it might be hard for you to see all of them. We've got Ricky Wysocki, Eagle, yourself, Paul McBeth, Adam Hammes, Kyle Klein, Kevin Jones, James Conrad, Nico LoCastro, Chris Dickerson. So I'm going to have Silas kind of start us here, and we're just going to start rattling off. Now, they're listed putter, mid-range, fairway, distance, so that kind of can help us to narrow it down. And we're just going to have Silas. We can't go super fast because Silas is going to have to type them in. But we'll Silas, you good with typing him in? Okay, Silas is ready to go.
Wait, this is what year again?
2021. So 2 years
2021.
Ago.
2021. Okay. So
real quick, let's just game plan real quick. 2021, we have Ricky was at Dynamic. 2 years ago, right? Yeah.
Did he go to
Latitude? Or did he go to Discmania or Dynamic Disc already? Or for Innova?
Wait, was he still at Innova? Man, we're gonna be bad at this game. We don't even know.
We'll find out real quick. By just doing it. Okay, so Silas here, start us up. This can get really bad. Here we go. All right, Calvin.
All right, KC Pro AVR.
Okay, KC Pro AVR.
Should I just start like
maybe just go AVR? Maybe just go AVR, Silas. Try AVR.
All right, AVR.
All right, we got AVR.
Rock.
Right. Rock.
Rhino.
Rhino.
Firebird.
Firebird. Yes.
Eagle. Seabird. Destroyer. Thunderbird.
Oh, he's crushing this. I love it.
I mean, AVRX3. I don't know.
Ricky's on Innova. Ricky's on Innova. Because he has a destroyer.
Yep. Pig. Whale.
Let me know when you want me to jump in.
I don't know what else Ricky
Zeus,
is on.
Zeus. Go Zeus. Paul McBeth. Force. Nuke.
Avenger. Okay. Avenger SS.
Buzz. Luna. Okay. Let's think too. Chris Dickerson, where was he? He wasn't at, was he Prodigy. At Discraft too?
No, he would have been at Prodigy then.
So oh my God, like, he has so many distance drivers. Yeah, he has 8 distance drivers.
So it'll be M3.
M4, Kevin Jones. Yep. Was that FX1? FD? Wait, do FD for Kyle Klein? FD for Kyle Klein?
DD3.
What is Adam Putt with? Challenger? No.
P2. Yeah, P2.
Oh, zone. Hit zone.
MD3. MD5. No MD5? Is that a thing back then? FD.
Hit me with a Raptor. Hit me with a Raptor.
PD.
What else did he throw?
I feel like Kyle Klein throws like the DD2 maybe.
Give me an Undertaker. Can I take Undertaker, please? Malta. Give me that Malta. What was that other thing you threw? Wasp. Give me a wasp. Wasp. Yes. Yes. Okay. What do we have left? Where are we at right now? Oh, we're crushing it. We're crushing this. No, we're crushing this.
I'm trying to think what other prodigies we said.
Yeah, it's hard that we can't.
In 2021, he was MVP, so it would have been.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ion? Yeah, Ion? Axiom? Is that no, classic?
That's one of their product lines. So, it would be like Tesla.
Neutron? Or
Photon? Photon's definitely one. Hex is definitely one.
Oh, Hex, good one.
Envy is definitely one. I mean, that's what he, you know, did his business with.
All right, I'm using chat. Onyx. Hit me with Onyx. Yes. Hit me with Envy. Octane. Reactor. Nomad. Do we have any of Eagles? Okay. What about Nico? Do we have any Nicos? What was Nico in 2020? No Nico. Where was Nico in 2021? Was he West Side? Oh my gosh. Where was Nico in 2021?
Eagle threw the FD2, right? I think he did.
Yep. FD2. DD3. Rainmaker. I guess that's DD.
I don't think that exists.
Oh, Splice, Splice, Splice. P3X. Oh, Mutant. Yes, Mutant. Yeah. Nice one. P3X. PD2.
Oh, that's a good one.
PD and PD2. You got both those?
Yeah.
FX2 for Dickerson. Okay.
D3. You probably put D3, D2, and D1 all in there for like Kevin and Chris.
They'd yeah, good call.
X1.
Good. Oh, Tilt. Kyle Klein, Tilt. Wait, what the heck was... Where was Nico?
In 2021, Nico was with Westside, right?
Did you get Logic, too? Did you do a Logic Kyle Klein? Westside? What was he? Was he Gateway? Was he Gateway?
Oh man, I don't know. Try Ati and or Anvil.
Oh, Anvil, yeah. Okay.
Westside then. So, oh man,
no Wizard. Wizard's not there. No Wave either for James Conrad.
Maybe Giant. Maybe through the Giant. Actually, I think Nico might have been throwing like Defenders back then.
I need to get the rest of these. I need to get the rest of these for Paul and Adam. Fortress? I should get all these. Let me try to think. Paul and Adam. What were they throwing?
Was Fortress on there? Man, mid ranges. What would Nico throw? Maybe a Fuse.
Chat, I need you guys to help me out with more Mayhem? No, Mayhem's not. Entropy? Entropy's there. Nice. Entropy's there. Pure. No, Pure's not there. What are these Discraft discs I'm missing? What's this other?
Man.
Maiden? I know. What are the fairways? Mantis? Undertaker, Onyx. Did you say Mantis? Yeah. That's like Yuli, maybe. Undertaker and Onyx Raptor.
Those are...
No. A Heat? Oh, Heat! 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 Yes! Okay, Heat. What else did he throw? Stalker, maybe? No.
Who are you looking for?
We need putters, too, for Adam. How does Adam not have a zone in his bag?
Focus. Adam.
Oh, he does. He does put the focus. Yeah, focus.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what was the other putt? What are his two putters?
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Nice.
What else do we need from this crap?
Reaper.
Oh, yeah, he was on Reapers. He had those.
It's not on here. Good, Yuli. I need more though. We need one more mid range. One more mid range for Buzz SS. Was he throwing that? No, I don't think so. What that? He was throwing a Buzz, a Wasp, and then like what? What else did he throw?
Did we already say Malta?
Yeah, that he doesn't have it. He has two fairway drivers and a mid range
that we're missing.
That we're missing from Paul. We have all of Adams. A Comet? No. Someone said Tantrum for Conrad. That's not on there. Yeah, you looking at the chat, Silas? Yeah. Okay. The chat's throwing some good ideas out there.
What? Two fairways for Paul?
I don't think these are real fairways. This is 2021. The Athena wasn't around yet.
Did he throw a tracker at all?
Ooh. No. That's a good guess. That was it? Nice, Calvin. Okay. All right, one more. What the heck else did he throw?
Fairway.
Oh, a Hades? Is that technically a fairway?
That's distance.
Yeah, Vulture's not on there either. All right, let's skip him. Do we have all of Calvin's? Do we have all of Calvin's?
So Draco? Is Rob 3 on there?
Draco?
Cayman? Okay, Cayman.
Okay, so we got all fairways. Nice.
And we already put in Rhino, AVR X3, and KC AVR. Or like just... Okay.
All right, Calvin's all done. All right, we're done? All right, How'd we do? I feel like that's.
Oh, dang. How did we miss that?
Oh, a Predator. Dang. Okay.
That was tough. I missed a ton of Nico's discs.
I don't think we got any of Nico's, did we? It took us 5 minutes for us to figure out what he was even sponsored by in 2021. Oh, man. That was tough. Okay. So if you guys enjoyed that, make some of your own. Challenge us. We'll probably do this every once in a while during the off season. I don't know. That's kind of fun. Maybe next time we'll do the, there was one that was like world championship. So you have to name everyone that has won a world championship.
That'd be tough.
I feel like you can get a lot, but then you, I feel like you would miss. All right, let's move on to listener questions. We got some listener questions tonight. This one comes from Joe Rod from Facebook. Do you think that before DGPT tournaments, pro players should hold short junior clinics to help grow the sport? Maybe the DGPT should reach out to local schools for clinics. Sponsors love these kinds of things. The Farmers Open at Torrey Pines also involves local charities in the sales of tickets to the tournament. The charity keeps a portion as a fundraiser. What are your thoughts on that? Should we be doing more leading up to a tournament in the community? Specifically with the youth.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always a good thing. I mean, I feel like it can be a little tough when it comes to a tournament week. There is generally quite a bit of stuff going on. I mean, that is kind of what Uplay, I think, does a good bit of. And there are a handful of pros that do, you know, essentially do that wherever, you know, Uplay has having like an event that coincides with a Pro Tour event. I think there's just a lot of levels to that as far as like what the event is, and I don't know, sometimes that just doesn't feel like there really is enough time, but I do think it is something that it would be beneficial for sure. I mean getting discs into the hands of kids is really important for the sport as far as its future growth.
I like the idea too of not even charging for tickets, right? You show up, you're part of this clinic, you get free tickets to Sunday, and you can just show up and have a lot more kids out there. I think that's all all good stuff. And yeah, you play, you're right. You play does a lot of this already and does some great stuff. So hopefully that continues. Paul Wilds from Facebook wants to know, what is better, new disc that flies like you want or beating in a disc to your liking?
I do love having a disc that's out of the box, just right where I want it. That is pretty dang nice. Whether or not it lasts there very long, that's a different question. But I would say having, if I have a disc I like out of the box, I have a pretty big stack of it. So I would say I would prefer that than having to beat in a disc.
Yeah, I think you fall in love with the disc that you beat in and you're like, oh yeah, man, this has a really nice flight. But you really enjoy getting a disc out of the box that you're expecting it to do something and it does that. That's like the greatest feeling. You never really throw a disc out of the box that does something different and be like, oh, I'm just going to put this in my bag and hopefully it beats into a disc that's useful, right?
So, yeah.
Andrew Foss from Facebook. And if you guys are wondering how to get your questions answered on the podcast, make sure you guys are following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And that's where we kind of take these questions. So Andrew Foss wants to know, there's a question directed towards me. He wants to know, would you rather win Amazing Race and get redemption with Paul as your partner or win a major on the Pro Tour? This is a pretty easy one for me. Mainly because I don't know if me and Paul would actually win. I think the partner I had at the time was probably the best partner I could have. We were teammates before, so I think we worked really well together. I think me and Paul actually would work really well together. And I think he's also talented in a lot of different things. So he would be a good partner on the Amazing Race, but this is an easy one. I think for me, winning a major, it'd actually be a lot less money, but I think you'd go down more in the record books for winning a major than winning on the Amazing Race. So that's what I would say with that. Levi Lapidary, this is from Twitter. Is throwing in snow with bad footing a detriment to your game, or should you play no matter what? This is a good question.
I've never played in snow, but my guess is if the weather is that bad, it's probably not great for your game. You're probably throwing completely different than you normally would. I guess it just depends on what you're trying to do. Like, is it bad for your game as far as, like, you know, are you getting good practice to be better to go play on the Disc Golf Pro Tour? No, you're not getting good practice in. You know, we never played, well, I won't say never, it snowed a couple times, but odds are you're not going to play in snow.
And
your
foot be like mud. Mud would be like the equivalent to what we kind of see.
Yeah, I guess that, I don't know. I just, for me, I think of the cold weather and I think of how much different it feels, like just gripping a disc feels and having it come out of the hand. And it's just, that's not like a feeling we get that often on the Pro Tour. And, you know, when it is, you can definitely tell. You can watch people struggle. But I don't think it's, I don't know. I don't think it's really hurting you, but I don't think it's really helping you that much going and playing in that weather.
All right, we have a question here from our Tour Life crew. Shout out to our Tour Life crew. He wants to know, Calvin, do you think Failure Lake was too easy for a Pro Tour stop? How did you like it?
Yeah, that was the course I got to stop at in Pennsylvania. It was pretty cool. I mean, I really only got the one playthrough and skins through it, so it's hard for me to truly judge the course and like how difficult it was. I don't think it would be like that a hard course on the Pro Tour, but it was a pretty awesome course. They had great elevation, and I mean, I don't think it would be that hard necessarily to even tweak it a little to where it could be a Pro Tour level course. I would say the one drawback to that place is it seems to be a little out in the middle of nowhere, but the property itself and the course, it was super fun and it was awesome. I would definitely love to go back there and play again.
Yeah, we don't really have anything in that. We kind of just like bounce up MVP, GMC, and then we're out.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be bad to kind of spend a little bit more time up there. right, this one comes from our Discord. Tomatoes, they want to know, at this point, I believe there's a disc for every realistic shot. How do disc manufacturers combat this to still try to grow? Are they researching to find better technology and make discs that actually make a difference? Or are they content with coasting by and making the same molds over and over again with different plastics?
Well, I think, we are getting there. But I think they're, like, you can create two discs that fly the same and they feel different. And maybe, one person likes one and one person likes another. So I don't necessarily think, like, that's a bad thing either. I think there's still quite a bit to be tinkered with. And then, like, a lot of discs are very different, thrown, at 50 miles an hour compared to 70 miles an hour. So I think there's still quite a bit to be found as far as creating discs.
Yeah, I think what Discraft is kind of doing right now with the Zone, where they have the Zone with a ringer top and then the Zone with a banger top, is really interesting. I think that is something that maybe in the future can kind of be looked at, to where, like you said, the discs are roughly the same and are going to fly about the same, but they feel differently. I think that's an interesting thing in the future. Now, how do you market that? Do you market it as, oh, these two discs are completely different? Or do you say, like, this is, I have a water bottle right here. So do you say this is bottle one and this is bottle two, and the only difference is the actual, feel of it, right? So I guess that could be interesting. All right, next one up is Colton Sparks. Similar to how there is a max weight to a disc, do you think that there should be a minimum weight? I have seen people with very light putters who can putt much farther than they really should be able to with their form.
Sorry, I was tinkering around with these settings for a second. I hear an echo on my end. I don't know if it was.
Oh, yeah. Sai, so you get that little echo action? I do hear a little echo now, too. Echo, echo. Oh, it's gone. All right, it's all gone. All right, Colton Sparks. Yeah, it's all gone. Colton Sparks just wants to know, should there be, since there is a maximum weight to disc, should there be a minimum weight to disc?
I don't think so. I think as far as, like, minimum weights go, like, I think it's great to have really light discs. And, there is essentially a minimum weight. It's like how you can get, like, there's an amount of plastic you need to fill the mold at some point. So, like, I don't think there really needs to be a minimum weight. It really is good to get discs that are super light into kids' hands and let them throw and actually see a disc fly.
I don't think there's that much of an advantage either of throwing lightweight discs.
No,
like, it's not.
I think, like, the advantage is for people that have, like, slower throws. If you're not quite getting a disc up to speed, it kind of helps you get it up to speed. And you actually get to see the disc fly. But as soon as you get, to the pro level, everyone's getting the disc up to speed. So it's almost like a disadvantage to be thrown with the lighter weight disc sometimes when it gets windy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, a couple more here. We have one from one of your biggest fans. This is Fake Big Hunt. What advice would you give people who are trying to make it on the pro tour?
Well, I think first you just need to get out locally and maybe even regionally and just play events and kind of show yourself that, you can win at that level before you really can even be thinking about playing on the pro tour. You need to, I think learning to win and play against tight competition is kind of a skill. So it's, going out regionally first, playing your regional players, showing yourself that you can beat them. And then once you're there, I guess it's like, it's hard to get on the pro tour. It's kind of gatekept by the fact that if you're not on the tour, you can't get points. So I think at this point, it's kind of looking into the new series that the pro tour is creating for the 2024 season and seeing how you might be able to play on that series to qualify for the pro tour.
Yeah, you make great points. And the other thing I would say additionally would be to look at the type of courses that are played on the Pro Tour and then try to find courses that are similar to that in your area, or make up holes, you know, if you can on some courses, make up holes that kind of fit that. Because if you're just going and you're playing a bunch of C tiers and local B tiers, and you're playing a bunch of like short par three courses, that's not really going to translate that well. So what Calvin said is, like, I agree that you should try to figure out how to win in your local area. But also, if you're just like killing it and you're doing awesome, but you're only doing it on courses that holes are less than 350 feet, that might not really translate to playing on the Pro Tour when you're playing on holes that are now 700, 800 feet long, right? So I think the combination between playing locally and kind of beating up on the competition around you, but also still kind of having it in your head too of like, what courses am I going to play if I get to play in a Pro Tour event, so that you're practicing those skills. You're not just practicing the skills that are going to help you in those smaller tournaments. All right, last question. Yusuf Hakimi wants to know, when will we see Afro Hair Heimberg again?
Well, it's hard to say. It's all just a function of how fast I grow my hair out. It's currently
no
short.
No haircuts in the future?
No, nothing. I mean, there may have been some poor decisions made at wedding number one. Which,
you want to elaborate on that?
I may have had a mullet for a while. And
wait, by choice or
you
what?
Know, it was cool. Decisions were made and they happened.
I can't imagine you with a mullet. I don't. Okay.
There's footage out there. It exists.
Okay.
But yeah, I had a mullet for maybe a week and a half. And then I got rid of the mullet for what I currently have, a little shorter here. Yeah. But yeah, it was very tight on the side, so I was limited on how I could recover from that. So it's really just a matter of time of how fast I can grow my hair out. But Afro Calvin, he'll return. As long as it's not like the middle of summer, he can't exist in summer. It's too hot.
The best way of teaching someone or learning yourself, you get what you pay for, is going to one of those, you know, chain haircut places where you can get a haircut for like $12 or $13. There has been so many times where I've walked into one of those places, gotten a haircut, and I'm so bad at this, is when they like hold the mirror up and they're like, all right, what do you think? Like, what am I supposed to say? Like, oh, it's terrible. Like, this looks awful. Like, it's because then it's like, it's the same thing of like, if someone brings, it's a little bit different, I guess, with like a waiter at a restaurant. It's because like, if a waiter brings you the food, at least you're disconnected between them and the chef, but you still kind of think, if you say something, you're like, are they going to spit my food when they bring it back? It's the same kind of thought, but here it's like, if I say like, oh, this is terrible, like, are they actually going to do a good job fixing it? So there's been so many times where I've walked in, gotten a $15 haircut, and it was like, yeah, looks great. Walked out, went someone was like, hey, just give me a one and a two on top, and just buzzed it all off. Because it's like you said, like certain haircuts, when they are done poorly, you don't have that much to work with. Like, you, there's not that many options. So you just shave it all off, and you're like, all right, I'm buzzing it.
Yeah, I think with my mullet, I just, you know, didn't have many options afterwards. I don't think the mullet was done poorly. I just think the mullet was a poor decision for me.
Gotcha.
Personally. I see what you're saying. I've experienced that as well. I think there was one year where I was on tour, and I went into one of those places, and somehow I ended up with hair that was shorter on top than it was on the sides. So it was like longer on the sides and shorter on the top.
No. Oh man.
Nightmare.
It was actually a tournament in Vegas. It was the first tournament for our Ultimate Frisbee season. And we were all like, let's shave our numbers in the back of our heads. We all thought that was a fantastic idea. So I was walking around campus for a few weeks with the number 21 shaved in the back of my head for a bit. Looking back on it, I don't know why we thought that was going to be cool. We thought it was the coolest thing ever in the moment. But looking back on it, like that just doesn't seem like cool at all. But we did it. And yeah, I mean, I think with the hair, like crazy decisions happen, I think, to a lot of people. You know, you go out, you dye your hair, you do something silly. It's hard to recover from it. You kind of just have to live it out for a bit. So
yeah.
All right, a few things housekeeping wise. Shout out to our Tour Life crew. We got a couple new members tonight. Thank you guys. The Spotify versus Apple battles, to get you kind of up to par here, Calvin. We've been having a battle between our Spotify listeners and our Apple listeners. And you know what? Tonight we're going to have a battle with our YouTube listeners. You guys that are listening right now on YouTube, drop a like on this video. Let's see if we can get more likes on this video than reviews on Spotify and Apple. Right now, we have 740 reviews on Spotify, 194 reviews on Apple. Spotify listeners, you are absolutely dominating it. We'll see if YouTube can win tonight and get more likes on the video right now than reviews. We'll see what happens, but we appreciate everyone that is watching the podcast and listening it wherever you may be. We are going to be doing a 5K Instagram giveaway very soon on Instagram. So if you haven't yet, go check out Instagram, tourlife_pod, I think, or tourlife_podcast. One of those will get you there. The giveaway, I'll give you a little sneak peek. It's going to be this new disc that actually drops tomorrow at 7 p.m. You've got the Ying and the Yang Dark Horse Nuke. It's double stamped, the two different foils on it. This drops tomorrow at 7 p.m. on brodysmith.discraft.com. That will be the giveaway at some point whenever we hit 5,000 on Instagram. So go over and check that out if you haven't already. And Tour Life, the Tour Life team has extended, has grown. We've been talking about the interview process for a while. I was looking at just hiring one person. We hired three people. We've got David, Grant, and Edwin that will be helping out in the future. I'll kind of give a little bit more information and maybe you guys get to meet them at some point on the podcast. But shout out to those guys. Let them know in the comments. David, Grant, and Edwin, they are all part of the team Tour Life moving forward. We're excited to see kind of how we can make this podcast bigger and better for everyone. Calvin, you got anything coming up? Any jerseys, discs, anything like that for the people to check out?
You know, nothing crazy, but as always, anything new, you can check out at flightfactorydiscs.com. They'll definitely be rolling out some stamps, whether it's now or, you know, coming into the holidays, but I would check out them. And then also, shout out to Zach Melton. It's his birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday, Zach Melton.
Yeah, I'm a bad friend. I have not called him yet, so that is my next order of business once this is over.
Well, we won't hold you up any longer. We appreciate you filling in. Yuli also was in the comments. He wanted me to let you know he really appreciates you jumping on here and helping us out tonight. And I know everyone listening always enjoys your thoughts on the topics of what's going on in the disc golf world. Just, you know, if you have any rumors of movement, you let us know. And if you're interested, under a
fake name.
Yeah, anonymous. Cinnamon anonymous. Also, if you like that Sporkle, I felt like you liked that Sporkle a little bit. We might have to bring you back on for another Sporkle action here in the future. But that's going to do it for us tonight, guys. Thanks for tuning in, everyone tuning in live. Thanks to everyone that's listening to this later on. We appreciate all the support, and we'll see you all next week.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.